Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Hugo Rose, the chairman of the Wine Investment Association. How are you, Hugo?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. We're going to pick up on where we were last week. I think last week we were talking about some of the structure of the SSA and the auditing process, but in terms of the audit itself, when Mazars come into an organisation and do the audit, is it a surprise audit, or will people get in a warning?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think that's invidious. So these are members after all, or potential members, after 1 year they will be current members. Mm. And so they will have notice of the audit. The surprise element will be the spot checking. Mazars will not tell them in advance which accounts, which cases of wine require auditing.
Okay, so they'll get a notice, and then Mazars will come in and randomly choose a couple of cases and follow the
money. Well, that's right. I mean, we've taken advice from Mazars on how to achieve the right level of inspection. Mm. So we're following their lead on that.
It's quite a hard balancing act, because on the one hand you want to attract people in, you want to provide at least some standards for people to adhere to, but at the same time you don't want to make them too rigorous that they drive your potential members
away. You're absolutely right, and we thought long and hard about this. We're not a policing organisation, where you would require absolute adherence and absolute standards being met, which would give total protection to the customer, but it would have no members. We need to build membership, and that means getting support from the members, and that means being reasonable.
In terms of the costs, what does it cost to be a member of the AA?
We're waiting for the final cost of the audit, for example, but we expect, we're into four figures, certainly. We expect the cost to be somewhere between £1,000 and £2,000 membership per annum, and that includes the audit itself, which is a day of an auditor's time, and this level of auditor, small sum.
Yeah, no, they're not cheap. That's a great thing about Mazars. They know how to charge.
you've said that. We have found them, let me put on record, to be very supportive and thus far reasonable. And we need, as we said at the presentation, we need an auditor who is recognised not just in the UK but also globally. And yes, there is a price to pay for that level of standard.
Yeah, no, for sure.
It's got to be one that carries weight, and yes, we'll pay a price for that.
No, for sure. You don't want some dodgy account.
We're expecting our members to raise their professional game, and we have to reflect that in what we're doing.
There's a couple of good things in the document. You've got your policy document, which I've sort of read through. There's a couple of really nice things in there. There was a couple of things I didn't quite understand why the need for it is. You in some of them you sort of say this is an issue in the industry and this is how we're trying to address it and things like that, and that's good. But at one bit you talk about the member will not advise or suggest otherwise or encourage a customer or potential customer to dispose of any regulated product in order to purchase wine as an investment. There's obviously a nerve there that something's...
You got it. Found it. And that's absolutely important. We have a 100% right to sell wine and to recommend wine to somebody who wants to buy wine. Mm-hmm. That is, we're entitled to do that. It's not a human right, but it is a commercial right. We have no right to sell or to talk about regulated products. And the reason where this becomes an issue is where somebody, a company, might be pretty keen to get the order and might make a claim that I see you're in, carbon credits. Haven't you heard that wine is a much better investment than carbon credits? And encouraging them to switch out of carbon credits into wine as an investment. They would be making statements which only people authorized by the FSA are allowed to make.
Okay.
So we are not a regulated, our business is not regulated, but our members must be absolutely clear where the boundary is.
Yep.
So in a sense, we are regulated by the FSA by exception.
Yeah.
Our members must know the limits of their reach. And that's a very, very important point, because there have been instances of people who've been swayed to sell what might have been a very good investment and buy wine, which may or may not be suitable for them. We can't be the judge of whether wine is right for you. That is for your financial professional to tell you, look, You've got this investment, you've got that investment, and we think a proportional investment in wine could improve your portfolio, could balance your portfolio, but a certified financial advisor can tell you that. We can't.
There was just some stuff that I didn't quite understand about some of the giving future price predictions and things like that. One of the things you need to be really careful about wine investing is, you know, people will tell you, you know, you can buy this wine for £1,000 a case and, you know, it shows a X growth and, you know, we predict that it's going to be worth £3,000 in 10 years' time. So you're going to make £2,000 profit. But that's not really what you make profit, because there's costs involved in that, particularly storage costs and things like that. Will you require people to give a net idea and explain to people the costs of storage and some of the costs incurred?
There are two issues you've touched on there. One is that it is a requirement of members that all fees are transparent, and that might be commission on buying, it will certainly be storage, and it might be a commission on selling. We have to pay for the work we do, so therefore there are costs attached.
Oh, no, definitely.
So number one, the requirement of transparency over fees. So we must make clear what the arrangements are for the cost of acquiring, the cost of storing, and the cost of disposing. Number two is where a company wants to make a statement about either the past performance of a wine as an investment, the likely future performance, or indeed current value. Now, we don't have a single prescription. We're not in the business of saying you must do it this way. We recognize that there's more than one kind of business with more than one kind of business model and more than one kind of way of doing things. So our job is to try and steer a course through that recognizes differences, but nonetheless has requires ethical behavior. And in terms of, we're getting into quite technical language here, but I think anyone in the financial world would understand straight away the issues involved. Of it is possible to make very grand statements about performance. What we say is you have to show alongside that statement where your evidence came from. Or indeed, if you say, if you're making a performance statement about a case of Lafite 2006, bought 5 years ago, I don't know if you could buy it 5 years ago, actually. Let's say a case of Lafite 2000.
Yeah.
It's appreciated 200%. Tell me, what is your data source? You have to show the data source alongside. So we're not dictating which data source, whether it is offer to bid, offer to offer, etc. But you have to make it clear. In other words, you have to allow the customer the opportunity to double check your figures.
I agree with what you're saying there in terms of you can't have one rule that fits for everything, because that stifles innovation. It's more important.
Yeah, and again, we'd have no members. So we're not interested in having one rule, because we recognize there's more than one way of doing business. There is more than one investment contract. It's not a one-size-fits-all. So we've had to think, given that there's more than one way, how are we going to deal with that? What is the requirement on the member? And essentially, it's to do with transparency, and it's to do with authentication of claims.
And just one last question. A lot of associations require that the people be good and upstanding people. Some of the people in the companies that are part of this have obviously had some censures against them from the FSA for different things in the past and all that sort of stuff, which is obviously, some people get quite uptight about that. You don't seem to, in your requirements, require that the person be a good upstanding person or to meet any sort of minimum standards there in your documentation. Is there a reason for that?
That's obviously a very important issue. Number one is we don't, as members, officers of the association, we don't have a professional relationship with our clients. And if you did have a professional relationship, you would have to meet professional criteria. So that is very relevant, obviously, if you're a chartered accountant or a lawyer. Number two, I'm not sure your facts are correct about the individuals having been censured.
Because your documentation does mention it yourself. In your press pack, you mentioned David Jackson. It says that the business itself was censured that he was involved.
Yes. Well, there lies a difference. And so I'm not trying to be mealy-mouthed about this, but We're talking about people who have years of business experience, some of whom bear the scars.
Mm.
We think, I know we've given the biographies of the people involved, and indeed in some detail, but this is it's important to play the ball, not the man. This is about the code of practice. It's about the principles and processes behind the business. Having said that, we believe in being as open as we can. We're not going to get credibility if we try and conceal facts and things that have happened. So what we do is anyone who wants to be or is putting themselves forward to be an officer of the association, i.e. a member of the board, which is effectively a director, we require them to complete a disclosure form which replicates FSA practice for FSA-approved people. So they have to tick lots of boxes about whether they have county court judgments and so on, whether they have been in brushes with the FSA, in fact, and so on and so forth. So number one, we require full disclosure. If we don't get full disclosure, that's a no-no. So we require a full openness about people's past. If legally they're entitled to be a director, they're then reviewed by the nominations committee. How do we feel about what this person has told us about themselves? I'm looking for someone who is squeaky clean. So we have processes involved to look at people's backgrounds. I think because someone has been associated with a company that got into trouble in the past, if that doesn't automatically, legally it doesn't disband them, bar them from taking up a position of authority or of responsibility. We look very carefully and decide whether what they're bringing to the association allows us to accept their candidature. And so we do make a judgment, if you like. And I can tell you now, the people involved have been A, very frank and very open about their past, and B, have, because they've had scrapes, and I won't say they're proud of it, but they have a lot of experience now about just the areas that we're looking at. I'm not saying that's a plus point, but it is. Well, I'm not saying it's an advertising feature.
No, I wouldn't advertise it. But
but look, we're not hiding from it.
No.
But, and C, they have put major effort and energy behind the organization. We would not be launching today without everyone's input. And I'm not prepared to throw them over the side. I need to recognize the efforts that they've put in. It is about transparency and about process. They have been very honest with us, and we have taken the view that not only do they not pose a threat, but their contribution is more than net positive.
I think some of the stuff where you know companies are closed due to the public interest, you need to be a bit careful about, but a lot of people, if you have a failed company, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, in many countries, people fail their business and they start several times before they get one right. Failure of a business is not an issue. It's more if there was criminality involved, in which case, if they've got a criminal record, I'd be more worried. I think we'll wrap it up there.
It's been a great pleasure talking to you, Chris.
Yes, mate.